UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
Treating congenital heart defects in adults is aided by the understanding the continuum of the disease from its infancy. My guest today is Dr. Mark Cribbs. He's the director of Alabama Adult Congenital Heart Program at UAB Medicine. Welcome to the show, Dr. Cribbs. The American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association have developed standards for treating adults with congenital heart disease. What are some of the challenges as you see it of treating these adults?
You know, probably one of the biggest challenges that we face is just the patients not coming for their appointments. In other words, there's a significant number of patients who are lost to follow-up well before they even reach their 18th birthday. A recent study has demonstrated that as many as 50% of patients stop seeing their cardiologist by the time they reach the age of 13. And that percentage does continue to climb as they get older into age. So even by the time they reach 18 years of age, more than 60% of the patients that have mild, maybe even moderate or even severely complex congenital heart disease have stopped going to see their doctor.
In this continuum of care, how often should patients be seen throughout their lives?
You know, that's a great question, and it's one that patients ask me all the time. And it really just, it does depend on their cardiac history. And so, for example, someone who has a history of a simple VSD that was closed very early in life, they really might not need to be seen but every 2 or 3 years, while someone who has a single ventricle may need to be seen as often as every 3 to 6 months.
Because there are so many different types of congenital heart disease, Dr. Cribbs, the guidelines include general recommendations that apply to most patients, but give us some examples of low-risk, simple congenital heart disease.
So as I mentioned before, a VSD that's been closed early in life is one of our more simple defects. However, a simple VSD can very much range in the spectrum. It really just depends on the size. So if it was a small VSD that was closed early on, the risk that we expect for that person to have later on down the road are really quite low. However, if it was a very large VSD that was closed later on in life, the patient may have already developed significant symptoms such as pulmonary hypertension. Then further on in the spectrum would be something like tetralogy of Fallot, which is considered a complex congenital heart defect, which has a number of issues that can occur down the road, including significant pulmonary insufficiency, dilation of the right ventricle, shortness of breath, and very significant arrhythmias.
So when you were talking about single ventricle, so are these along the lines of examples of the highly complex congenital heart disease?
Absolutely. They are by far our most complicated patients that we take care of. However, they are doing very, very well and leading productive lives out in the community.
If cyanosis is present, what are some other health problems that can result from that?
So cyanosis can lead to the ability of a clot, for example, that might develop in the leg after a long car trip to travel up to the heart and then scoot over to the left side of the heart, which would then have free rein to either go into the coronary blood vessels themselves or up to the brain and cause a significant stroke. The other things that we see related to cyanosis are an elevated hematocrit. And I think one of the long-term misconceptions related to an elevated hematocrit is that it by itself can cause a higher viscosity of the blood and increase someone's risk for having a thromboembolic phenomenon, such as a stroke. But what we've learned is that having a high hematocrit doesn't in and of itself put that person at risk for that. It's when their iron levels are low. That's what can really increase the risk. And the reason why I bring that up is patients that have a high hematocrit are often sent to our office and tell me that they've had multiple times when blood has been removed from their body in order to try to lower their hematocrit. And that has really been seen to be more detrimental than good, more harmful than good.
What are some other comorbidities that can arise with congenital heart disease in adults?
Yeah, so probably the most common comorbidity that we see, and actually one of the more common reasons why patients re-present to care, is the issue of arrhythmias. pretty much every person that has had a congenital heart surgery is going to be at risk for an atrial type arrhythmia. Most often it's an atrial flutter. The fortunate news about that is that it's easily treatable in the EP lab. In fact, more than nine times out of 10, it can be cured. The other types of arrhythmia that we encounter in patients with different types of defects, however, are ventricular arrhythmias, and those can lead to sudden cardiac death. Perhaps the other very, very common comorbidity that we find in patients as they age is the issue of heart failure. And actually, heart failure and arrhythmias are the most common reason why adults with congenital heart disease actually succumb to their disease and die.
If they were coming to you on a regular basis, are you doing testing on them? Is there exercise testing, stress testing involved?
Absolutely. So it really, again, gets back to what their heart history is like. So for someone who has a history of a VSD that was repaired early in life, they're at a small but present risk of atrial arrhythmias. And so if they are complaining of palpitations, we would certainly do monitoring such as a Holter monitor or an event monitor and certainly an EKG. Someone who has a history of tetralogy of flow where the risk of atrial arrhythmias or even ventricular arrhythmias is much higher, we will routinely screen them with monitors to make sure that we can catch something that they may not even feel. And then when it comes to stress tests, we do that on a number of patients, particularly when they complain of symptoms such as shortness of breath or chest discomfort when they're trying to be active or exercise.
Are patients more at risk for infective endocarditis?
You know, that's another good question that patients ask me a lot. And what we've found is that the risk of endocarditis is actually probably lower than what we've believed it to be in the past. Those who are at risk for endocarditis are those who have prosthetic valves. Those who have a history of endocarditis are certainly at risk for having it again. Those patients who remain cyanotic. And then those that have a small residual defect where the surgeon tried to close a hole, for example, a VSD that might not have been closed all the way where there's a residual defect, those patients are also at risk for endocarditis.
How important is it that these patients see an experienced adult congenital heart disease center?
The adult congenital center that's experienced with these types of patients is going to be able to offer them the full range of things that they would need, everything from an EKG to an echo to advanced imaging such as a cardiac MRI or a cardiac CT to stress test to cath and so forth. It's really the experience and the knowledge of the congenital heart defect that helps these patients the most. There's a number of places in Alabama, for example, where a person could get a cardiac MRI. But then the person who's reading the test may not fully understand the congenital heart defect itself. So they might get good pictures, but may not be able to interpret all the details the way that someone here at UAB could.
And in just the last few minutes, Dr. Cribbs, how can a community physician refer a patient to UAB Medicine ACHD Center?
Right. So one of the easiest ways is to go online to our website, which is at uabmedicine.org. And we really do try to quote-unquote bend over backwards to get these patients in on a timely basis because, as I mentioned before, a lot of these patients haven't been seen for years and years, and so getting them in quickly and trying to figure out what's going on really is important.
Tell us about your team at UAB Medicine.
So our team at UAB most directly involves myself, and then I have two other pediatric cardiologists, Drs. Colvin and Dr. Johnson, who have been taking care of children and adults with congenital heart disease for years, and they are certainly a very important part of our team. We have a nurse, an adult congenital nurse, but really and truly the team is really the entire division of cardiology on the adult side as well as the pediatric side. And I would add to that the congenital CV surgeons that we work with, because each of these patients may have something that goes on that involves CV surgery or involves the electrophysiology folks on the adult side or involves a congenital cath that would be done on the pediatric side. So it really is a system-wide team effort.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Cribbs. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.